Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I am Gary Bramling.
And I am Connor Orr.
And we are both tired. But we are still energized.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. That's editorializing a little bit on your part. I think you're probably... Did you go to bed at all?
Yeah, I took like a 30-minute nap when I realized it was going to be like nothing for me to work on while I waited, so...
Okay. Yeah, I got about, I would say about an hour and a half. So I'm a little bit more well rested than you right now.
And to be clear, we're not complaining. We don't have real jobs. We're not turning giant hand cranks or anything like that. we're watching football and then writing/editing stories about it. And they played the Super Bowl.
It was a great Super Bowl.
It was, look, we'll get into it. We'll get into the call that no one liked. We'll get into some of the other stuff that people didn't like. I understand the complaints that the ending was anticlimactic. That is absolutely true. But I thought it was one of the best and most efficiently played Super Bowls by both sides that I can really remember. And... you know, I think even if you go back to like the Eagles-Patriots game a couple years ago, you could kind of point to some absurdities on defense where it was like, why were you doing that? Like, of course he gave up a lot of points. Why were you doing that? This one was just, I thought, good offense beating good defense. Great offense beating good defense, I should say.
Yeah, I thought both defenses were called really well, all things considered. I mean, this wasn't a slapdash operation, but I thought what was interesting to me was just, well, I mean, we can get into it however you want to get into it, but I was blown away at the second gear that the Chiefs had. I mean, I was sitting there, you know, to give everybody kind of a peek behind the curtain, right? I mean, we all have two different stories cooking, right? During the week, during the day. You know, I work on the magazine, as does Gary, and then I work for the web. And so I got the web story has to be up immediately, the magazine story we do overnight. And so I have four different files there on my laptop, you know, Eagles magazine, Chiefs magazine, and then Eagles web, Chiefs web, and you're working on all of them. And you're just like, oh, look. At halftime, it was, you know, you and I talked at halftime. It was like, okay, Eagles plan. Like, it's done. This is over. Patrick Mahomes is hurt. This is not going to happen. And I did not foresee the second half coming as it was.
Yeah, not only because of the score, obviously the Eagles having a 10-point lead at halftime, but yeah, Mahomes and that ankle, you know. The long halftime, I don't know what they did to it. I don't know how they treated it. I'm not sure anyone will possibly ever know what went on there. But you talk to people over the years. I remember I talked to Dwight Freeney about the Colts-Saints Super Bowl. Freeney had the ankle injury in that game, and he said the thing that killed him was halftime. Because halftime's so long, and you're doing everything you can to keep it warm and to... keep it from sort of stiffening up and being a problem in the second half, and he just couldn't do it. And he, you know, the way he put it was, you can't simulate the adrenaline that you get when you're actually playing live snaps, and it was an issue. But whatever the Chiefs medical staff did to one, get him ready for the AFC title game, and two, get him out for the second half and moving around pretty well. Again, not as well as he usually moves around, but certainly well enough at this point.
I'll make a crude joke and say that ankle is going to need a week at Passages Malibu in detox. is that too mean?
I'll allow it.
I just thought there was no way, and it's so funny. I mean, I do enjoy the fact that there is a minor to mid-minor internet conspiracy theory now that Patrick Mahomes faked that in order to lull the Eagles into a false sense of security, which I mean, boy, would that take some serious foresight by Andy Reid. And the payoff would be such as, like, the Eagles would realize that you were joking the first time that you rip off, like, a 35-yard run in the second half, which Mahomes did twice. He had two kind of gutting runs in the second half, one to set up the first touchdown and one to set up the game-winning field goal that changed the course of the game. I don't know. I mean, maybe the Eagles were like, let's not rush him because he's hurt, but I doubt that's the case. They were probably looking for blood at that point.
Oh, yeah. The sort of the it's not quite irony, but I'll misuse the word anyway. The irony of Mahomes winning with his legs with the bum ankle the last 2 weeks. And again, not running a ton, but certainly picking up big runs at key moments. Whereas last year when they lost to the Bengals in the AFC title game, a big part of that was the Bengals dropped into this, you know, super, super drop eight coverage and were kind of daring Mahomes to actually go out and scramble instead of throwing, and he just wouldn't do it. So that's some, you know, whoever wants to remake the Alanis Morissette song, you can go ahead and use my lyrics that I just laid out right there. It's like what? Running when your injured ankle is not doing well when you didn't do the same thing a year ago on your wedding day.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. No. And then you fit Jonathan Gannon's name in there somewhere.
So I was going to say, I wish one of the Gannon.
I was trying to fit somebody into like Jagged Little Pill, like, but there's nobody like Jagged Little Steve Spagnuolo. It just doesn't work, you know.
We need someone named Phil on one of these teams. Otherwise, it just doesn't work. Put it in your pocket, bring it out next year.
Yep,
and we'll see how it goes.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about those two Chiefs touchdowns. And the ones I'm talking about are first Kadarius Toney and then Sky Moore on very, very similar concepts, opposite sides of the field. That was a cool little thing that the Chiefs kind of had brewing that they were setting up throughout the game.
They were setting up throughout the game and they were setting up throughout the season, which is what I didn't realize. You know, I wrote the game story live, but then went back and started looking at it. And I think both of Kadarius Toney's touchdowns were on jet sweeps that were like, I'll call them fully cooked jet sweeps, right? Where he came across the line, took the ball, and then went around the end and actually scored. And so I think when you start setting up something like that, it's interesting on multiple levels because is the Eagles defense, you're going to think that you're going to follow him all the way across the line. So you're setting that up. The subplot going into this week was that Kadarius Toney was the only player on the Chiefs roster to carry a limited designation as an injury. He had a hamstring and knees. I don't know. I mean, if you're getting this 3D chessy on it, if you're Nick Sirianni, you're probably, and Jonathan Gannon, you're thinking he's probably not going to do a whole lot of stopping and pivoting, you know, like hard stops and pivots. Yep. And then throughout that second half, you were just doing a ton of teaser motions with Sky Moore and Toney. And so all of a sudden, all this comes into play. And I was fascinated by the Eagles defensively for a lot of reasons. You know, in the first half, they just kind of let Travis Kelce go, which is kind of phenomenal. And in the second half, I mean, I don't know what you do differently. That was your defense, and it was the perfect play call, right? It was something you saw. You saw the tendency brewing, and then you hammered him on it. But to stop that motion halfway and then just have Toney pivot outward and then have Sky Moore do it on the next possession, it was brilliant. I mean, and there was nothing else that they, you could just tell they didn't have something in the package to account for that. There was nothing there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to know, how precise the Chiefs were in sort of setting up that motion, on the specific plays. Like, is Tony pivoting as soon as he sees Darius Slay sort of turn to look for his teammate to make sure that he is communicating that he is passing off the route? Or is it just kind of, you know, take three steps and pivot and they just kind of caught a break that, I mean, my goodness, you couldn't have had a more wide open receiver in the red zone than you did on those two plays. And yeah, motion causes problems. And, you know, we've talked all season about how the Chiefs replaced Tyreek Hill with, you know, doing a lot of different stuff. Much more efficient offense, much more just down-to-down a better offense this year than what they had last year. When they had that slump mid-season in 2021, a lot of it was just execution-based and just the inability to go out and sustain drives during, again, what amounted to a mid-season slump for that offense. But you saw it all. I mean, Mahomes, he did quick game stuff. He did RPO stuff. He extended plays. They did some high-low stuff. I mean, he did basically everything you would want. And people won't look at the stat line. And, at 182 yards, that's not going to blow anyone's minds. He did not have kind of the big signature throw in this game that you would look at and say, like, wow, what an incredible play. But it's just the fact that he can do everything at such a high level that, it makes your life so much easier as a play designer and a play caller, and it makes your life so much more difficult as a defensive coach at that point.
I want to know what, because I wrote a column after the game just about how good of a job Andy Reid did, I thought, and I called Mahomes the unquestioned MVP, and it was a column that ran immediately after the game had ended, so it was while votes were still being tabulated. I mm-hmm. am a voter. And so I can share with you all that I voted for Patrick Mahomes, but I was like, someone on Twitter said unquestioned. That's a little strong. And I said, who else are you voting for? like Isaiah Pacheco?
No, it was absolutely unquestioned.
One of the gutsiest performances in Super Bowl history.
You could give the second star to Travis Kelce, and maybe the third star, you could start talking about the linebackers at that point, or maybe Kadarius Toney. Look, Kadarius Toney had tremendous value, obviously catching the touchdown, but as a decoy, had the big punt return. They had that one sequence where Josh Sweat had jumped off sides. They had set up what looked like it was going to be a little screen to Tony on the left side of the formation, and Juju Smith-Schuster and another receiver were out there to block in front of it, and they came back on the very next snap and ran the exact same look, except now Smith-Schuster faked the block and slipped out, and they got like a 15-yard gain off of that, which again is just kind of, it's well-designed, but there's also something you said for just the fear of Kadarius Toney at this point.
You know who I should have voted for MVP, Gary? Where do you think I'm going with this?
I mean, none of the specialists. Tommy Townsend had a nice hold on the game-winning field goal.
I'm going to vote for the person who had a better 2022 and 2023 than anyone, and that's Dave Gettleman, the drafter of Kadarius Toney, Saquon Barkley, Daniel Jones, James Bradbury, he was the signer of James Bradbury.
Yes.
Yeah, man, it's basically just a walking congratulations tour for Dave Gettleman. In absence of these beautiful signature throws for Mahomes, we had two signature runs, and I would argue that first, I think it was a first or second passing play of the half, when he comes out, has to escape, flings like a diving pass to Kelce, and then just gets absolutely flattened by Josh Sweat. Yes, I mean, they're not gaining 50 or 60 yards, but
yeah,
they are signature moments. Nonetheless, in terms of they're very, very difficult to do, especially when your ankle hurts like that.
You know what was nice, Connor? If you didn't watch any football this year until the Super Bowl and you were wondering how the Chiefs fared without Tyreek Hill this year, you kind of got all the answers in this game. Yeah, this is what they did. They didn't get a bunch of 60-yard touchdowns, but they just put together a lot of really impressive drives here.
They did. And to your point, right, some of the slip, the wide receiver blocking and then slip blocking. I mean, a little bit of McVay-ish stuff from Andy Reid, I thought. But what really set it apart, and, you know, I don't know, you tell me if I'm being a little hyperbolic. Is that the word? When I'm using too much hyperbole?
Yeah.
Yeah?
That's it. Yeah. Hyperbolic's a word. Absolutely.
I think Andy Reid, I wrote this last night, is, to me, one of the best play call, if not maybe the best play caller and play designer in modern NFL history. And here's why I'm going to make that argument. Because I think most of our offensive geniuses, with the air quotes, are... they have a very specific relationship to one scheme in particular. Mm-hmm. Like when we go back and we're like, oh, well, Andy Reid's not, doesn't mean more to football than Don Coryell or Earhart Perkins and, you know, all these guys, you know, Mike Shanahan and the outside zone and Sean McVay, but they're all connected to one thing that has been shut down at one particular time or another. I mean, Sean McVay's offense was completely blanked in a Super Bowl against Bill Belichick. You know, they scored 9 points. And I think what's amazing to me is that Andy Reid comes out at halftime and starts emptying a bag of tricks that give Mahomes a little bit, it gives Mahomes a little bit of time, right? You had old-fashioned pro set stuff. You had offset eye where Jerick McKinnon is the fullback and then he's taking like trap handoffs. Mm-hmm. You had the pro set handoff to the toss to Isaiah Pacheco on the 3rd and 1. You had a sort of the you brought back the carousel huddle, which didn't work, but was gonna be cool. Telling you, I think that play was going to be neat. And just a ton of stuff like that where you're busting stuff out left and right and left and right. And so much of this stuff is keeping Mahomes in short drops, maximizing yardage. And you did it down 10 with your quarterback in the worst shape that he's been in all year in the Super Bowl. And you won the game. Like that to me is really impressive.
Yeah, it's we're at a point in the evolution of the NFL in general. I don't know if we're ever going to see, I shouldn't say this, but I don't know if we're ever going to see like a huge breakthrough. You know, it's no one's discovering the forward pass in 2023 at this point. There's only so much more you can do with what's out there. But yeah, I mean, the ability to set up what he wants to do later in the game, like the sort of the story of play calling, he's completely mastered that. And sure, it helps to have Patrick Mahomes, but you know, you saw this when he had Alex Smith. You saw it a little bit when he had Donovan McNabb back in the day. Those are both good quarterbacks, just not obviously at the level of the guy he has now. And now he has a guy he has, and they can they kind of have limitless possibilities at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think saying that Andy Reid is only good because of Mahomes completely ignores a pretty long and successful body of work to the point where if we're saying like Sean Payton is the offensive guru of our time, I would say that Andy Reid is, you know, lapping him in terms of success with similar better talent, you know?
Well, let's get into controversy number one here, and that is the James Bradberry holding call toward the end, which essentially allowed the Chiefs to run the clock all the way down. They're probably going to kick a field goal, but the Eagles are going to have a chance to go back and try and put points on the board. The call was, and James Bradberry said after the game, yes, you know, he held. He got caught holding, and it happens sometimes, and it's the way it goes. I can get I can get on board with the backlash. It's a tough call at any point in a game like that. I'd have to go back and really watch and see, okay, did we have more physical play downfield? Did we have some other plays that got, you know, sort of let go and no flag and all that stuff? I don't really know. But I think the backlash is just more of a result of people were looking for the huge finish and looking for the Eagles to have a chance to mount a drive and have some drama down the stretch. And obviously that kind of that sucked the air out of that balloon at that point.
I guess. I mean, if you're the Eagles, though, you gave the Chiefs the ball back with basically 6 minutes and a full suite of timeouts. Like, you know, the time to fix that was a long time before, you know, that play happened. I mean, don't let Patrick Mahomes run for 35 yards. And I think Mahomes referenced it at some point in the post-game locker room, like not just beat Hassan Reddick in a foot race, but like demolish Hassan Reddick in a foot race, you know, and nothing against Hassan Reddick, but like, you know, you can't let that happen. And so, you know, I get it. I understand it. There's little you can do when the script writers put the finishing touches on the script. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to just abide by that, obviously, or else, you know, everyone gets revealed the odds behind the curtain with the NFL. And who wants to do that? Tinfoil hat time, Gary.
Gotta have your pratfalls down, especially with 2 weeks to prepare. You gotta do it.
I saw the argument, though, that. And I thought this was fair, right? That while it wasn't as egregious of a hold, it did allow Bradbury to stay on the wide receiver, right? I mean, he used the hold, the jersey tug, to position himself in a way that allowed him to stay relevant on the route. And so, you know, and if you're an official, like some of the stuff that these guys have done, I thought there was no excuse for this year. And especially in the playoffs, it was just absolutely embarrassing. But this was one of those times where I'm like, okay, let's remember what it's like to be on the field as an official. Let's remember what it's like to have a split second go by and you turn around and you're looking at the play and a guy literally is grabbing a jersey. Like, you know, in the biggest moment of the NFL season. And you can argue that there was, you know, kind of phantomy holding last year in the Super Bowl too, right? In a similar spot. But if you're a defensive back, you just can't put your hand in that position at that point, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Or you just hope you grab for the jersey and you kind of miss it and it doesn't reveal itself as a tug. But yeah, you'd have to kind of look over the entire game and see, okay, is this kind of stuff, you know, were guys getting away with it? But Bradbury did not seem surprised that he was flagged. And even on the field, he didn't really have a big reaction. None of the Eagles really did. But yeah, I don't know. Again, I think people are just kind of bummed that they didn't get their big, exciting finish at this point. To be clear, though, I do think the Eagles played a 1.5% better game than the Chiefs in this one. But they, you know, two evenly matched teams, they just had more weirdo plays go against them than go for them. Like, they got the Harrison Butker miss early. That's a weird play that has nothing to do with your team or your performance. It's just a kicker, you know, doinks a kick, and the other team is set on 3 points. But the Hurts fumble was obviously the big one. Nick Bolton's scoop and score. That was, I mean, look, it's a team that didn't turn the ball over. It's an offense that's really not going to put the ball in danger, and you just get this super fluky play, not only turning it over, but giving up a touchdown at that point. So it's a free 7 points to your opponent. And then obviously the long Kadarius Toney punt return was a huge play at that point. Just a bad line drive punt, and the Chiefs guy makes a play.
Yeah, there's a couple things to unpack there, I think. So, right, you take the Harrison Butker miss, and then let's say that you take the that off the board, and then you take the touchdown off the board. You're essentially the Nick Bolton touchdown. You know, you're essentially having Mahomes driving at the end of the game, and instead of needing a field goal to win, they need a touchdown to win, right? Because they would have gotten the field goal earlier in the game and not cut. So they would have been down four, right? I think they're scoring at that point. Yeah. You know, like I would challenge an Eagles fan to disagree with me at that point because their defense was on ice skates at that point in the game. The only counter that I have to you, Gary, is I was really somewhat flummoxed by the Eagles' defensive game plan. Like, I thought Gannon called a good game. I don't think it was a bad game by any stretch, but to allow yourself to be manipulated, like, there were three wide open touchdowns, like,
yeah,
wide open posterized style touchdowns. Travis Kelce's first one, when he gets ISO'd on CJ Gardner-Johnson and just pulls the out and up. And, you know, if you zoom back and, you know, we eventually found a way to see this in the press box, but, you know, Valdes-Scantling is inside, and he sort of, he runs this route that basically targets the deep safety, right? So he's preventing the deep safety from coming down and helping CJ Gardner-Johnson over the top, which would, but it would have been tough on the deep safety no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there wasn't a lot of physicality with him at the line of scrimmage. I just thought, and maybe that, maybe teams have tried and failed that. I don't know. Maybe that's, maybe I'm suggesting something that's old hat, but I just thought that they allowed him to really dominate early in the game. And he had a couple wide open catches that helped the Chiefs move the ball and sort of stay relevant while the Eagles were getting out their best stuff.
Yeah. I mean, they got him free releases through motion. They also, I think it was Epps on the touchdown, not Gardner-Johnson, but they dictated that matchup, which, yeah, that's an offense out-scheming a defense at that point. And look, I think it kind of happened on the other side, too. The one thing I'll say about the Chiefs' defense, I thought they did a really nice job against the sort of read option type stuff. I thought Nick Bolton played a really good game. They were ready for that. I wasn't, just after watching what the Eagles did to the 49ers linebackers last week, and Nick Bolton kind of similarly to Dre Greenlaw being a, you know, relatively short linebacker and maybe not having the best line of vision into the backfield on some of this stuff, I thought it was going to be an issue all game for the Chiefs, but it really wasn't. They were doing a lot of squeeze and scrape type stuff with the linebackers, and the Eagles kind of just stopped. They went away from it. But part of the reason they went away from it is they started going empty and just running Jalen Hurts on designed runs out of that, and that was working really well, and the Chiefs didn't really have an answer. And as we've seen all year, you know, the Eagles do this as a four-down offense in areas where other teams don't, and you get the butt-pushing stuff on short yardage, and that continues to be both unstoppable and borderline unwatchable.
Yeah, I think this was the last year for that. I would guess that gets outlawed in the offseason. What do you think?
You think so? I still can't believe that. Gosh, it was the Eagles-Texans Thursday night game. That was when they first like announced it, assisting the runner. But they were like, no, only if you pull him, which, you know, happens sometimes, I guess. But, you know, I hope we saw our last butt pushed.
Yeah. Me too. It's just, it's anticlimactic. It takes away from, I think, like the spirit of the game a little bit. And I maintain, and I asked a couple offensive linemen this for a story that never ran on, you know, don't you think someone's going to get horribly disfigured in one of these? And the answer I was surprised was a unanimous no. I don't know. I can't let go of the fact that that seems to me like you're jumping into like a wood chipper a little bit.
So, yeah, I still watch, after all these years, I watch these games and I marvel at the fact that people's bodies don't just explode on a regular basis with the just with the speed and strength of everyone out on the field. I guess there's maybe somebody argued for, okay, well, it's not like a violent type of way, like no one's slamming into the line, like you're getting it and then a lot of people are getting pushed, and if your quarterback is kind of balled up, maybe he doesn't get mangled in the same way. I'm sure it's very unpleasant in the bottom of the pile, but you're probably not tangled because you haven't really put your body in, you know, weird positions as that all unfolds, it was kind of, I don't know if you guys could see in the press box, I was, just to let the listeners know, I was, as usual, just curled up in the fetal position on my couch watching on TV throughout the game. But Chris Jones tried to go over the top, which really doesn't work.
It was cool. Yeah, we can see that.
It just kind of looked like he was, I don't know, it was like a half-hearted crowd surf type of thing, kind of like, I think it's the REM video for Drive, where they're doing kind of the mock crowd surfing thing, where Michael Stipe is actually really, like, sad and disillusioned as he's crowd surfing. It sort of felt like that, and then they just kind of dropped him at some point.
Man, Michael Stipe.
Michael Stipe.
Yeah, okay. Yep. I'm pulling it up.
Okay.
What a are you an REM guy at all or no?
I didn't used to be. I've come to appreciate them though.
Hmm.
Are you not an REM guy?
Do you know why? And I can't believe I can recall this in the depths of my brain right now without any sleep.
Yep.
I remember watching like an interview he did back in like the 80s, and someone asked if they could get a copy of his lyrics to his song, and he like chided them and was like, "We don't do that." And everyone was like, "Yeah, that's so cool." And I was like, "No, it's not." And then from that moment on, I just completely couldn't stand the guy. So
he's a lot. He's a lot as a person, but I think their music's, it's good. I'm not going to call myself a fan because they obviously have a very avid following, but yeah, I like REM.
Are they still going? Like, are they still a thing?
I'm assuming everyone's still going, but yeah.
All right. Quick hitting thought on the halftime show. What did you think about it?
Oh, I thought it was fine. I know everyone was... I don't know. I don't get worked up about the special guests. Like, you have a big headlining person, and she can carry the show and that stuff. I guess it was a surprise that she's pregnant, or...
Well, that was the special guest, Gary. That was the soon-to-be child.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of neat, you know?
Yeah. How was it, there?
It was very cool. I think as I knew it was going to happen, right? And I hate it so much. And I'm proud to announce that this is my last week on Twitter. I've really enjoyed the medium, but I will only go on once a day for 30 seconds to retweet my work as an obligation, because I knew this was going to happen. The second it was over, there was some clout-chasing sports writer who just couldn't wait to tweet, "This was the greatest Super Bowl halftime show since Prince." And I knew it. I could see the tweet in my head, and I looked right before the second half started, and I was like, gosh darn it, there it is. And you just can't help yourselves. Like, why can't we just let something stand alone as a moment in time without trying to compare it to the other thing that sports writers universally love, you know? And
yeah.
It's just like... stop. Like, the Prince thing was great. It was good for a certain reason. And this was neat too. It was a pregnant lady dancing up on a you know, she was in like a platform, like 30,000 feet in the air. That took some guts, you know?
Yeah. And that was a little bit scary. I didn't like that. That's too high.
it was too high. I was like, you know, you put it all out there. And the only other thing I'll say about Rihanna is I was not aware of the depth of her repertoire. Like, she has a lot of hits.
Yeah.
In terms of like, so I was like, oh wow, I didn't know that was by her.
Yeah. Okay. I'll give you that. I don't like that diamond song. I think those are really corny lyrics, but,
you should have read some of the stuff I had to write this week, man. Yeah. Well, you did.
She should have done our Jonathan Gannon song.
I also thought Lift Every Voice and Sing was very good, and Chris Stapleton smashed the national anthem. I thought that was a very good national anthem.
Yeah, that was a very good national anthem.
And crushed the under.
Yeah, he did, right? He played it in like a normal way.
It was 122 seconds, which was 6 seconds faster than the under.
I don't know if you saw. I tweeted immediately. That was the best national anthem since Whitney Houston.
It's like,
I didn't.
All this stuff, you know what it is too? It's like what was cool about Chris Stapleton was, I think our old friend Jonathan Jones tweeted a salute to him. And because not a lot of people, people don't know who he is necessarily, right? Mm-hmm. Like he's one of those, like, in his world is a star, but not in the way that like Rihanna is a star, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think like that was one of those moments where we didn't have to compare it to anything, but we could be like, oh, that was good. I like this guy, you know. Well, you know, and then you wiki him for a minute, and then you go to the kitchen and make yourself something to eat. Like that's how we could do this thing.
That's the performances we like. Yes. All right. I have one more sort of general halftime show take, but it ties into this next topic, and we are going to introduce it by bringing our Simpsons clip of the week right now.
I just looked out there and there's puddles of water all over the freaking stage.
Yeah, well, look, I don't want to lie to you boys. 6 days a week, the place is a hockey rink.
Yeah, well, this is a rock concert, not the bleeding Splish Splash show.
So there you go. That is, of course, Spinal Tap playing Springfield, and they eventually cut off the show early. Good night, Springton. There will be no encore. And yeah, the field conditions, while not necessarily wet, basically, I mean, it was like a skating rink. I don't really know the science behind why the field was like it was, but it was really bad.
So this is interesting. I was the pool reporter for the Kansas City Chiefs this week. Mm-hmm. And so for those of you who don't know what that is, like each team, each conference, there's one reporter for the AFC, one reporter for the NFC, and there's only one reporter that's allowed to practice, and then we disseminate heavily redacted and edited reports as to what we saw during practice all week. And one of the things that I thought was interesting was I asked Andy about the, I ended up not publishing it in the pool report because it just didn't fit, and I didn't think it was interesting at the time, but I'd asked Andy what he thought, because there were some complaints about the field conditions in Glendale when the Chiefs played the Cardinals week one.
Sorry, to be clear, you're talking about Andy Reid. I know you're on a first name basis with him, but not everyone is.
Yes, Andy Reid. And so I asked him, I said, you know, is the grass here at the practice field in Tempe, is that simulating somehow the grass in Glendale? And he was just saying, you know, it was a great field. He's glad that they were able to practice on it, and that they were ready for whatever was going to happen. Because he's like, well, we played on that field already, but it was a different field entirely. That field was grown for 2 years for this Super Bowl and was kind of like debuted after, you know, someone spent $1 million on it. And the only sound theory that I saw, Booger McFarland said that if you leave the roof open at night in the desert, there's like a moisture transfer on the grass that that kind of makes it really slick. That was kind of the only thing I could think of. But shoot, I mean, here's the deal, guys. It's like, you know, we want natural grass. It's natural grass. And so would you rather that, or would you rather like 30 guys tearing their ACL in this game? You know, I don't know what the answer is here, but I think you'd probably rather the natural grass.
So that's the conspiracy theory I'm more into. Did the NFL intentionally just put out $1 million terrible natural turf so that they could be like, oh, guys, come on, you don't want to play on this, right?
Wow.
Cost you a couple of ACLs, but isn't that the right price to pay at this point? And I am, look, I'm of kind of two minds on the grass versus natural turf thing. Number one, I do think we need to see a broader independent study of injuries and why the injuries are happening. I know the NFL sort of put out their study saying natural grass. What do they find? Natural grass has more injuries was the claim from the league mandated study there. I don't think I necessarily buy that in full, but I think when you're talking sustainability, you probably have to go with something artificial if that's what you're going to emphasize. Obviously, the owners are looking at their bottom lines and saying it's much more easy to maintain the artificial turf, et cetera, and if that technology gets better, maybe you have a good solution at some point. But certainly, they are not. You know, artificial turf is not winning the battle of hearts and minds at this point among NFL players, and that's the issue. But this turf here was, it was not good turf, Connor. That's my take.
I would, I mean, my only grass take is that I find that grass tastes better than artificial turf.
No.
Like if you have to eat either one of them, and like, I it's like a weird thing. Like, I don't know, like for people who have played sports, you have the taste of the, of like the turf in your mouth kind of sometimes. So when you walk out and there's either like a very rubbery synthetic-y taste, or there's like a mm-hmm. dirty, like lawnmowery grassy taste in your mouth when you walk out on the field. And so I'd prefer the latter.
Okay. A little Wizard of Sod work right there.
Hey, speaking of which.
Yeah.
Our former co-host and colleague, Jenny Vrentis, mm-hmm. Wrote a great story about the Wizard of Sod, the groundskeeper who was at every Super Bowl this week. And she also, I don't know, I'm not breaking news because it's not breaking news, but had her first Sunday page one in the New York Times on Sunday.
Oh, that was her first Sunday page one? Okay.
She's very, very, very cool. So any listeners who still follow Jenny and her work, which you all should, I think you should send her a congratulations. That is what we would term in the business a BFD, a big freaking deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially on this PG show, that is how we say it. Yeah, the other thing with the synthetic turf, the pellets, you know, the little black pellets. Those are really cool, like aesthetically pleasing to watch. I know some players. Yeah, I know some players are complaining that they get in their eyes. I have a child who plays soccer on that sort of synthetic turf during the winter, and I'm always amazed. I am a very sedentary person. I don't really move anymore. I walk and I stand. That's about it. And I'm always shocked when I'm like leaving the facility and I'm like, oh, my shoes are really uncomfortable, and they're just filled with these little black pellets, and it's like I was not moving in a way where my shoes should be taking on black pellets. I don't know,
it would, you know what, it would look cool, it would look cool on the Kadarius Toney touchdown.
Yeah,
because he's going to be kicking up a lot of dirt, you know.
Get that little like field level camera, like the pylon camera, which, by the way, is still the goofiest thing they have in the NFL, where the chain crew guy has to like set up the little pylon camera, even though it's like it's the sideline. You don't need a pylon on the sideline. You need a pylon at the end zone, but not like just at the first down marker. It's really silly looking. They should have a better technology.
I mean, you could say that about a lot of things. To put a bow on the surface thing,
mm-hmm.
I mean, boy, I can't believe I'm about to say this. But there's a lot of things that we can bang the NFL for. But to treat them the way that we treat them collectively sometimes, where like we just find the one thing that's terrible about a game and then we harp on it and then make it a massive issue, is somewhat unhealthy, I think. You know, it's just like, okay, yeah, like the officiating was bad, and then it's bad, it's bad, it's terrible, it's awful, it's ruining the game, and then it's like, oh, okay, like the, you know, whatever it is, the turf is bad, it's, you know, it's like, you know, there's a lot of other, like it was bad for both teams, like it was universally bad, you know?
To me, it was the equivalent of just being like, oh, well, what if you played it outdoors and it was raining? Like, that's kind of what you ended up with. I do think it played a role in both pass rushes being invisible. I think the offensive lines played well, but man, there was nothing going on. There was very little Chris Jones. I mean, Frank Clark was unblocked multiple times and just still couldn't actually close in and make a play. And the Eagles guys didn't do anything. I mean, Javon Hargrave made one play on Pacheco run that might have been popped, and that's about it.
Yeah, I was tracking Chris Jones for most of the first half to see, and they were trying everything. I mean, They had him to the point where I think they were getting a little desperate, and they were having him do third down rushes. A lot of his third downs, he was lining up off of Lane Johnson and trying to speed rush on the edge, which good luck, because like Nick Bosa wasn't getting home on that a week ago, you know, the defensive player of the year. But they tried everything, and Jones was fiery. I mean, he, I'll tell you what, like, that was a guy that was trying everything in a game, and even if it didn't necessarily work out, you know, it was he was exhausting all efforts.
So I will wrap up Super Bowl stuff, and then we got some non Super Bowl news to get to. But not a great night for Fox. Just sort of a sloppy broadcast. They, you know, when they did the carousel huddle, they were late to show it. You got it on the replay, but that was a bit. We never got a replay of the Devontae Smith fourth quarter catch, that long catch where he was just wide open by a million miles. I was curious as to why he was so wide open, and Fox just didn't show it. They really struggled with the holding call rep, replaying that. Kevin Burkhardt, I don't know, Kevin Burkhardt and his commentary on certain oligarchs who were in the luxury box was unpleasant to most people's ears.
Ooh, and, who did he get?
A couple of media oligarchs from different countries, one of whom owns a certain social media company that you will no longer be participating in a significant way, was described as brilliant, which in some ways perhaps, but probably not a word you use as of late for his recent past. They followed Travis Kelce for so long that is all you got in the immediate post game, and they were trying to get the we all wanted to see the Kelce brothers meet up after the game, and they followed him, didn't get it, and then just as like I think it was. I might be mixing it up. It was like you could see over Travis's shoulder, Jason was coming toward him. And all of a sudden, they cut away to an Andy Reid interview that was just, you know, Andy Reid gives good interviews. This was not a particularly good one. He was just like, yeah, everyone played well. And you missed the Kelce brothers. They could have at least showed it. And then they had to revert to Skycam, and the sound doesn't match up. It was just kind of a mess. I will say one thing, though. Greg Olsen, who obviously was great all year, this was not his best game. He just sort of stumbled over his words. I mean, who am I to talk? But stumbled over his words more often than he usually does. But he pointed out, and I did not know this. I had never heard this rule. I didn't know it existed. After they did the carousel huddle, it was Andrew Wiley was the dude in the middle of that, right? Who became the eligible receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Wiley is not allowed to line up as an ineligible receiver in the next snap. If you are an eligible receiver on one snap, you cannot line up as an ineligible receiver on the next snap. So they had to put Lucas Niang into the game at right tackle and keep him there for a second snap. And Greg Olsen was on top of that, and he pointed it out. And I was just like, wow, that's, you know, a lot of commentators are like, so that kickoff bounces out of the end zone. That's not a touchdown. They're going to bring it out to the 20-yard line. It's called a touchback. And for Greg Olsen to come up with that, that was really impressive. Assuming he's correct. I assume he's correct.
Yes. So when you're in the press box, what happens is you don't get the live game feed, and you get kind of the Fox feed. And so what happens is we don't go to commercials, so we don't get any commercials. And it's funny because during commercials, we get the camera just looking around and searching for people, looking around the audience and searching for people to show. And so there was the oligarch sit down that we just got on our screen for like 35 minutes while we were waiting for replays of things. And it was just like the two of them eating popcorn. And I was like, what is happening? And the other really enjoyable thing, which I don't know how many times they showed it on the broadcast. I'm excited to go back and look. But so it was Roger Goodell in the aisle seat, Donna Kelce in the middle seat, and then Damar Hamlin in the other seat. And they sat these people together, which, like, I don't know why. And like, but the Fox camera during the commercials, so in the press box, just kept panning to them to see like if anything interesting was happening. Mm-hmm. And nope. I mean, like, it was Roger Goodell forcing, you know, conversation with Donna mm-hmm. Kelsey, and then Damar Hamlin just kind of like biting his fingernails, being like, oh, okay, I'm still here.
Yeah. I mean, those, Donna Kelsey and Damar Hamlin individual are just, you know, wonderful people as far as I know. I don't, you just drop them in somewhere and it's like, what are they going to talk about?
Like, right. It's like, like if you put me in the booth with between the two media oligarchs, it's like I'm just gonna be like, hey guys, you know,
yeah.
I'm reading a book about Ernest Shackleton. You guys want to talk about Ernest Shackleton? You know,
what do you guys think about REM? So we had one piece of non-Super Bowl news, at least as of 11 a.m. Eastern time on the day after the Super Bowl. Shane Steichen looks like he is going to get the Colts head coaching job, which is, look, it's a good thing for, of course, for Shane Steichen. It's a good thing for the Colts, who I think we were all kind of ready to point and laugh for a season at the Colts. And now it looks like they're going to be sort of a reputable organization again.
Yeah. Obviously, I mean, you know, the last 2 years, I really, when I did my head coaching list, I put my foot down and I also declared a top candidate. And we're now 2 for 2 on said candidates getting hired, which I think is a neat thing. Shane Steichen, I think, went from having no head coach. I don't think he had a single head coaching interview last year. To being interviewed by most of the NFL this year, and then got the Colts job. I mean, I think he's going to be great. You know, you and I worked on a big story about him together. I think he's got the foundations to be a really good head coach. Good day for the list. The list wins on. The list is 2 for 2, so we keep rolling. That's but I mean, they're. It's a victory in a couple ways. I think it's a big victory for Chris Ballard, who ran the process and then doesn't get steamrolled by Jim Irsay at the last minute and forced mm-hmm. to hire Jeff Saturday. I think it's a big win there. I think it's a big win for the Colts because, again, basically you're it's funny, right? You're pulling an Eagles in a way, right? You're getting rid of somebody from the Andy Reid tree to bring in somebody else from a different branch on a different version of an Andy Reid tree. Like Nick Sirianni is not on the Andy Reid tree, but he's not off the Andy Reid tree, right? He's on the Frank Reich tree, which was off kind of the Doug Peterson tree, which was off the, you know, if you can follow my logic there. And so if you're the Colts, you loved Frank Reich, just not enough to keep him. And so by bringing in Shane Steichen, you know, you're kind of you're getting a similar vibe, right? There's that great kind of Chargers brain trust where Sirianni came from, and just individually, I mean, I thought he called a hell of a Super Bowl. I thought he ran one of the best offenses in the league. I think number one in explosive plays this year. I want to say. Because I think we all thought it was the Chiefs, but I think that the Eagles led the league in explosive plays this year. Well, it's a huge stat, right? And I think he can create that. All depends on the quarterback and who you're getting, but I think he'll be ready for it. I mean, he was successful with Phillip Rivers, Jalen Hurts, Justin Herbert.
Helped Justin Herbert break in. This makes sense, and it certainly makes sense if you're going to, as we presume the Colts will, draft your next quarterback. They have the number 4 pick and would presumably get one of those top 3 between Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, and Will Levis at this point. So there you go. The MMQB NFL podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Super Bowl champion Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, please leave a rating and review because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.